Hello, all you out there in Radioland. This is KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, you're on kptz.org. The website is more than just a way to listen to today's shows. For example, you can find the biographies of all our hosts and DJs. You can look up calendar listings to find out what's happening around town. And you can sample some of the earlier shows as podcasts. Much of the original programming is on as podcasts. Double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as earlier ones. My name is Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? Who are all those people wearing the R2AK t-shirts? Don't they know the race to Alaska left Port Townsend quite some time ago? Still, I guess some of the contestants could still be out there on the water. And who's that guy eating what must be the world's largest banana split down at Don's lunch counter? And who's the young guy playing on the fiddle on the corner on Water Street? How much money can you make playing a fiddle in Port Townsend? This show, Our Town, profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work in Jefferson County. We talk with people who make up the eclectic mix around these parts. We talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otters, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Listening to Our Town is a way to meet some of Port Townsend's authentic and even eclectic people, your neighbors, your friends, particularly the people you don't know yet, but you'd love to meet them. Today, my guest is a local legend, Robin Bergstrom, the owner of Bergstrom's Antique and Classic Cars, that eclectic and majestic emporium of all things auto down on Washington Street. Sure, you can buy a car there, but you can also indulge your passion for all things car-related, the superhighway of American dreams. Welcome to the show, Robin. Are you a local boy? Were you born right here in Port Townsend?
I arrived here in the 40s, and I lived originally in Chimicum and went to school there, and then came to Port Townsend.
I see. Did you go to high school in Port Townsend?
So I went to Port Townsend High School, graduated here in Port Townsend.
Okay. So high school is a very formative stage for most people. What were your passions when you were in high school?
My passion was basically the car and what it brought to young people. It was a time when you would build a car and show it off. My first car was a 1940 Chevrolet, which I customized and had my mother help me with the upholstery.
Wow. What color was it?
It was a deep maroon, and that was based on the fact that I'd been looking at Hot Rod magazine, and that was a color that stood out.
Yeah, having a cool car is very important in high school. My first boyfriend in high school had a really cool car. It was a restored 1939 Ford Coupe, older than both of us, but it was fun. You sort of rebuilt your first car.
Yes, it was a time when we were able to get help through garages that were local here. The fellows that ran the garages would help us. We also had access to lots of parts. In those days, we had wrecking yards. Some of them were local, and we were able to get parts to build our cars.
Well, one of the things about having a cool car is showing it off. So where did you go in Port Townsend to show off the car?
Oh, okay. We had a place that was called the Corral, and it was just on San Juan Avenue, and we would meet there with our cars, and we would, you know, and we had the milkshakes and the hamburgers and a good time. It was great. And then we also had another drive-in. Trying to think of the name of that drive-in right now. Crazy Eric's.
Crazy Eric's drive-in.
Crazy Eric.
So you hung out at Crazy Eric's. And did you actually do any racing secretly? Were there any hot rod action out in the streets?
Well, we did some. And, you know, we wanted to be good young citizens. And our parents would know eventually if we got out of hand.
Yes.
But out on Hastings, we had a quarter mile set up. I mean, we knew what the perimeters were. And I think the local police were fine with it as long as we kept it under control. I think they thought it's better they're out there than they are racing around in town.
Right. Well, that's cool. So what did you do after you graduated from high school? What was next?
After high school, there was a number of things that I did. I did go to college for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I attended Peninsula College. And then also had a tour in the service. And when I got out of the service, I worked in Alaska for 2 seasons.
Were you fishing in Alaska?
I wasn't fishing, but I was working with the seafood businesses. And this was in Saldovia.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did the next season, the next summer, was working with the railroad.
And what'd you do with the railroad?
And so working with the railroad was a job because, now this was right after the earthquake, and the land around Anchorage was really devastating. So you can imagine the tracks were torn up. It was one of our ventures that we thought we could go up there and make some money. I found out that this was a job that I had to take on in order to keep going up there. So I worked what you call a Gandhi dancer up there until I was able to drive spikes on the railroad.
I've never heard that term before, Gandhi dancer. What does it mean?
It's an old term started back in, I don't know if it was in the 1800s, and that was the way that you repaired the ties that hold the tracks. What you did is there would be gravel that would be laid along the side, and then you would shovel in this gravel in between the ties and tamp it down by hand.
Wow.
By using your shovel.
That sounds like hard work.
And it was hard, very hard work.
In general, people say pays pretty good to work in Alaska, but a lot of times people decide that it's not for them. They want to do something else. What brought you back here, or did you go somewhere else first?
This was just a summer job.
I see.
As soon as that summer job was over, I was back in Port Townsend, and that's when my father had decided to buy a building downtown, the Kuhn Building, and asked me if I wanted to help him with the restoration.
Okay,
there.
Just so our listeners know, the Kuhn Building is still there. What's in it now?
The Kuhn Building had the Sports Townsend shop.
Yes.
And also, that's where the Whiskey Mill restaurant is.
So your father owned it. Now, obviously, he didn't have Sport Townsend or the Whiskey Mill there. What did he have in that space?
So this was called Bergstrom's Department Store.
Okay.
And so it was a store that carried basic clothing, mostly sporting goods, based around sporting goods. So it was clothing, footwear, hardware.
Sort of like Swain's used to be?
Exactly. A smaller version of Swain's is what you'd call it.
And so you were working there with your parents?
I was.
And how long did you stay at that, or what's the progression?
That was from 1965 until 1978.
Mm-hmm.
So that was
okay.
a long haul. So in that period of time, then I was married,
mm-hmm.
and we were very busy.
But did you just totally give up on cars, or were you still working on cars
the
side?
Oh, no. Not at all. No, I was still involved with cars. My father would get after me a few times when I'd be working on a car in the back, because we had quite a bit of space at that building. So I did not give up on cars.
Do you remember any of the cars from that era that you were working on?
I worked on a lot of different cars, and then there was a time I also got into sports cars. So the sports cars that I enjoyed was Triumphs, like TR3s,
yeah,
TR4s.
That's cool. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. The show's called Our Town. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. Our Town profiles some of the unique and talented people on the Olympic Peninsula. Today, my guest is Robin Bergstrom, the owner of Bergstrom's Antique and Classic Autos. He was just telling me about his love of Triumphs, TR3s, at one phase in his life. Roughly how many do you think you worked on or restored?
I believe I probably had about 3 TR3s and 2 TR4s before I bought a brand new TR4AIRS in Seattle. And that was British Racing Green.
Whoa, sweet.
And my wife said, well, probably that might have had something to do with our relationship.
I see. Okay.
Okay.
Enough of that.
Enough of that, yeah.
Okay. What were the steps that led up to you actually starting a store of your own?
my father asked me before, we sold out the big store, and that was in 1978. Did you and your brother want to continue on with the business?
With the department store.
Yes. And I decided, and my brother decided, that this was the time to change. And I decided to give it a try with the cars. So I started small, where Forest Gems is. I had three bays with a hydraulic lift. I could put cars up and work on the cars. And then I started buying parts and working on cars. And at that time, I'd had a little bit experience working for an auction company in Seattle, just on Sundays.
Right.
And I knew a little bit about auctions and how auctions worked. So I was able to buy cars occasionally at, you know, a lower price.
Well, you told me when we were talking earlier that you were sort of what you called, I think, a car jockey at the auctions. How did that work?
A car jockey was a person at a car auction, and this was like the Seattle dealer's auction, where you would be called in to bring a car into the auction location and show the car off. But a lot of times you would be out in the field trying to get a car started because either the keys were lost or the car wouldn't start. So we were jockeying cars.
You're saying in a field, you were showing them outdoors, or were they in stadiums? How did it work?
When South Seattle Auction Company started, they started in a large white tent. Mm-hmm. And that's where they would have bleachers, and the dealers that were there to buy cars would be inside. The cars coming up for sale would be outside, and there was a garage of sorts where there could be a little repair work done. But generally, these cars were outside before they were brought in to be auctioned off. So we would drive the cars in, and there would be just a large rug over the dirt or grass.
Okay.
And we would jump out of the car, go and open up the hood, open up the trunk and the doors so the dealers could see what the car looked like.
Cool. It sounds like fun.
Today's car auctions have changed so much, and so if you go to their car auction today, there'll be like probably five automatic lanes bringing cars through. That was the difference.
Wow. So you probably got to know a bunch of different kinds of cars.
That was part of my learning experience, working with cars, and I started at like 15 years old and rebuilt an engine, which unfortunately didn't work out too well, but it was a learning experience.
What do you mean it didn't work out too well? What happened?
Well, the engine blew up, and that's didn't understand that the crank needed to be turned.
Oh, yes. Details.
Details.
Were you in any car clubs as a young man?
Yes, we had two wonderful car clubs here in the Northwest, I'm going to say. In Port Townsend, we had what was called the Peninsula Puddle Jumpers, which was more about older American cars.
Okay.
The other club was the Peninsula Sports Car Association, which was sports cars. And these were folks from Forks all the way to Quilisane that enjoyed driving, some racing, Gymkhanas, rallies, that kind of thing. So that's where I got my experience with the sports cars.
So describe like one of these rallies. What would happen?
When you had a rally, we would get the cars together, maybe have breakfast somewhere, and then the rally would be all laid out ahead of time. The drivers would have instructions just to get out of the car lot, and you would have checkpoints. So you weren't exactly sure where you went. You would follow, and as long as you were maintaining a certain speed and you found the checkpoints, you were on schedule. If you missed, you're going to be in deep trouble. It was a challenge. It was challenging. It was a lot of fun. And it got us to different areas. So we would take the ferry across and go over to Whidbey Island, and then we'd do a tour there.
So you're talking about doing 20, 50 miles, something like that?
Oh, sure.
Wow. Did some of them go really long, like hundreds of miles, or were they more?
No, our rallies were basically short tours, so we would have time to eat out, and we had a lot of fun. It was a fun time.
And back to the Puddle Jumpers for a minute. What did that group do?
The Puddle Jumpers was a group of enthusiasts with old American cars, basically. The basic car that most of us had were Model A's, Model A Fords and Model T Fords. And we would get together, and sometimes we would get together with other clubs, like there was a large club in Bremerton, which is still there, called OVAC. One of the events that I got involved with was putting on a slow race, of all things. So they let us bring the cars out to Fort Worden on the grounds. And we had races that were going as slow as you could without having the car stall out in low gear and then
that's interesting.
Second gear and then high gear. And these were families with kids.
Uh-huh.
So we got the kids involved, and we would do driving real slow around cones. They would be on the running boards. These cars had running boards, and they would be doing like a potato pickup. So the kids that got the most potatoes that picked them up as we went around the cones would be the winner.
Well, then, wait a minute. Did the kids jump off the running board, or did they pick them up while they were on the running board?
While they were on the running board, and they had a long stick,
uh-huh.
pointed stick, and then they would poke the potato and put it on the running board.
And roughly, what age kids were you dealing with?
These were probably kids somewhere around, well, they had to be at least 6 years old, up to, say, 10, 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I don't know if that's completely fair. I think a 12-year-old would have a real advantage over a 6-year-old.
Well, I don't remember the ages, but
yes.
I know that they had a lot of fun. And we had other games, too. So the thing was that we were young families, and we were giving the kids some pleasure. One of the really fun things that we did in that club was to go out and have a picnic. And we're talking about picnics like you would have had back in the old days, where you throw the blanket down and you have your basket with all your little sandwiches and goodies and fruits and thermoses with your liquid refreshments. And we would locate areas that were kind of out of the way. Maybe it would be an old road that had been abandoned, like parts of 101 that were abandoned.
Oh, huh, that's interesting.
And secluded.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. But you were, meanwhile, starting to build your own shop. And where did you said you started out where you told
Forest
me.
Gems.
Forest Gems, yes, okay. And then gradually you expanded. I've been in your current shop, and you have a whole bunch of remarkable things in there, including cars. So tell me a little bit about some of your more memorable transactions in the shop.
Okay, we had some amazing times. One of the really interesting times was with a person here in town, Glenn Archer. And Glenn was a car collector, collected exotic cars, pretty much. Packards and Cadillacs, that kind of car.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was one car that he brought up. It was a 1940 Cadillac that had belonged to Charles Coburn. Charles Coburn was one of those early actors. I think it was in 1943 he did the movie The More the Merrier. And this car, this Cadillac, had on the inside doorpost, in silver, was replicas of the Oscar. Why did that guy ever let go of that car?
That seems pretty amazing.
So Glenn Archer, he had connections down in Hollywood, and he brought the car here and then experienced what it was like and played with it and had a good time. And then he said to me, he said, Robin, he said, it's time for me to sell the car because we're bringing another car up and I'm going to enjoy that. So I said, fine, and brought it in the shop, and it was pretty amazing to have a car of that nature.
Yeah, that's boggles the mind. So the doorposts were somehow silver Oscars. That's amazing. I mean, clearly this was very custom made.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
What other cars do you stand out in your memory?
There was a story I want to tell, and mm-hmm. it had to do with Starbucks.
Starbucks, okay.
We had several cars, and three cars stand out. And one of the cars was a Brass Era Model T, like about 1914. Another car was a 40 Packard, which Glenn Archer had half interest, and I had the other half interest. And then a beautiful Model A. I got a phone call. This lady called, and she said, I am interested in those three cars. And I replied, have you seen the cars? No, but I had a friend come and to look at the cars, and they look fine.
That's a little odd.
I'm rolling my eyes yeah. now because I thought, that sounds interesting. And she said, now I will write you a check, and don't worry because I'm going to be leaving for Europe, so you'll have time for the check to cash. Again, I'm rolling my eyes, you
and
know.
You didn't even this? Meet this lady?
Had not met this lady. So the check arrives and put it in the bank. And about the same time, my wife calls me and she says, I was watching on news and they have this lady coming off of the airplane handcuffed. And her name is, and I said, no.
Oh, no. It was the lady with the check?
It was the lady with the check. I wasn't sure how things were going to pan out, sure. So I called because the two other cars were on consignment, and I said, I'm not sure how this is all going to play out. They said, well, let's let it ride, and as it worked out, the check was cashed, and the money was in the bank. Starbucks came in with trailers and picked up the cars.
That's really weird. That's a weird story.
It was weird.
Did you ever meet this woman?
No.
And when you say she was coming off the plane in handcuffs, did they say what for?
Oh, I missed out on the important part.
Yeah.
Yeah, she embezzled the money.
Aha.
She was a secretary.
And she embezzled the money. But in the end, from your perspective, the transaction went through.
Transaction went through. And as far as I know, when Starbucks got the cars, they put them up for auction and got their money back.
Oh, well, that's good. And I presume she went to jail.
I suppose she did.
Now, you told me an interesting story about a pickup truck that was owned by two brothers on Whidbey.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I got a call, and a fellow said, I've got a 1951 Chevrolet custom pickup to sell. I said, with 28,000 original miles? Yes, and then he told me the story. He said the car was over in Eastern Washington. It was two bachelors that had bought the car, truck, brand new, and it was their prize because they lived in just a modest little home with an outhouse in back. They were coal miners, but they had wood-burning stoves, so they needed the truck to go get firewood. But the truck never left the town, small town, and the people there knew the truck. When they passed away, their sister, who was widowed, was there, but as far as I know, she didn't drive. Their next-door neighbor was really nice and had helped them with the house, maybe putting a bathroom in the house. So she gave the truck to him, and the truck stayed with him then for a number of years until it was brought over to his brother in Whidbey Island. And I was just amazed when I went over to look at the truck. It was exactly like they said. It was all original. And it is in here in Port Townsend now. We sold the truck, and it's with a person that's really enjoying the truck now.
Well, that's really good. Well, in your shop now, you have a certain number of cars, but you have a lot of other things in there. Can you tell us about some of the other types of things you have in the store?
Well, for all these years, and this is going on 38 years, we have been selling a good part of my business's parts.
Uh-huh.
So I've been selling lots of parts, and some of the parts came from either old warehouses or collections. And in early days, a lot of this came from wrecking yards, where I would take my truck and I would go mostly into Eastern Washington where it was dry so I could get decent dry parts.
And you also have some old gas station pumps in there, or at times you do, yeah.
People are excited about Petroliana.
Petroliana.
This has to do with gas pumps and the old signs that went in these garages, gas stations. And that's been also a fascination for me. So what I have in the shop right now, a lot of those are just for display.
Mm-hmm. They're part of your own
They're
personal.
Part of my own personal collection. The parts have been parts that people need or they call me about or a lot of times just come in the shop and buy parts.
Well, it's sort of like there are a couple of different things going on in your shop. Some of it's very practical, you know, the need of a certain part for your car. But some of it's more like a museum or a fantasy man cave.
Well, it definitely is. People come from all over. We're getting so many people and from other countries. We've had people from Canada, but there were some people from Australia recently that work with doing louvers for cars, very specialized field. And they brought over samples of their work and told us a story about how that all began over there in Australia. And their culture is far different from us, partly because of their distance and their ability to get parts like we could in America.
So are you saying it's harder to get parts there?
It always has been.
Okay.
Yeah. So we brought the Rakers Car Club down so that they could hear the story and have them see some of the work that they do on these panels that are going to go on cars.
Huh. So this is a group of Australians that are doing these special panels, right?
Yes.
Wow, that's cool. Do you have any idea what percentage of your customer base are locals versus Australians or other faraway people?
It's hard to put a figure or a percentage. I think basically the locals have really helped to keep the business going with their need for parts. But most of the cars, not all, but most of the cars are sold outside the town.
Okay. A lot of businesses in this area have the winter business and they have the summer business. Is that true for you? Does it vary a lot?
It does vary. I would say, you know, the summer is bustling and it's pretty busy. Of course, during the summertime, we have more people thinking that the shop is more of a museum. So we are entertaining a lot of people. Yeah. In the wintertime, it's more what we would call hardcore. So it's the locals and then people that are coming in to work on the cars.
Well, you know, I guess some cars are particularly hard to find parts. I have a girlfriend who had an old EW Bug, and people were ripping off pieces from her car. Mirrors, bumpers. I mean, does that happen all over?
I think it is happening. Right now, the Volkswagen is a very popular car. The older Volkswagens, the young people are taking it on, and then there's people that see a way of making money with the internet. I think that's why you see some of these cars losing their parts.
Yeah. Well, you know, Robin, we're almost out of time, but you have a very unique and special store. I really do think it's sort of magical. You know, the car has played such a role in American culture and fantasy. I'm sure you get a lot of people in there who are appreciative of what you're doing.
I do. And just want to say I've had some wonderful young people that have worked for me. One in particular, and he's working with cars right now, is judging. And his name is Ryan Hossacker. Ryan is an amazing young fellow. He's already introduced himself to Jay Leno and other car enthusiasts. And he just loves cars. He's very familiar and has a knowledge of cars that's just amazing. I can hand him a stack foot high of ads for cars, and he'll know the cars and be able to file them for me. He and his family get to travel and they go to car shows and he's involved. It's really great. And another person is William Walker. And William started when he was so small. I said, you got to wait for a couple more years. You can't be working on cars now. And he wanted so badly to get in there. And so I put him, you know, busy cleaning chrome parts and things like that. And as it turned out, he was quite a photographer, and his mother and I encouraged him to go to school in California and take some classes there. And he did, and now he is one of the top photographers for Motor Trend.
Cool. That's
and gets nice. To travel and gets to photograph cars, and it's amazing.
That's amazing. Well, I think Jay Leno, who's a big car fanatic, should come check out your shop if he hasn't already. And I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. I also want to thank the man in the back booth, John McPherson, our engineer. He's the one who makes me and my guests sound so much better than we really are. There might be a lot more ums and ers in the show if he wasn't around. I also want to thank our talented and tireless program director, Larry Stein, and our chairman, Robert Ambrose. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ 91.9 FM. Our Town profiles some of the fascinating people who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. My guest today has been Robin Bergstrom, the owner of Bergstrom's Antique and Classic Autos. Bergstrom's is indeed an auto dealer, but it's much, much more. It's a museum and an ode to the all-American passion for automobiles. Thank you for listening today, and remember, keep listening to KPTZ for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.